Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am still just a dude.
It really stuck that time. It didn't
throw me off.
Didn't hang you up.
I was ready. I was ready. I was kind of ignoring you and just waiting for the opening.
Yeah.
Get in there. Jump right in.
Well, I think it probably helped that I'm sitting here wearing a black robe and a powdered wig.
That's right. So, it didn't throw me off that you're throwing that judge in there now. Order in the courtroom. Here come the judge.
I feel like we've been here before.
Well, yeah.
Kind of like deja vu all over again.
Well, same time as last week.
Or Groundhog Day.
Yeah. It is Groundhog Day.
It is Groundhog Day when we're recording this.
And I think that furry rat predicted early spring.
Early spring? We haven't even had winter yet.
That's all right. Early spring will be just right. If we're out sunbathing in March, it won't bother me a bit.
Well, you might be onto something there. I don't know. It seems like we haven't had any snow this winter.
We haven't. I think they reported a snow-free January for at least our area.
Yeah.
We had a few flurries, but nothing that ever stuck on the ground.
The mountains had some snow.
Oh, yeah.
They always do.
Canaan Valley and up through there, they had plenty of snow up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we're snow-free here in the Ohio River Valley.
Snow-free in 2020. Doesn't quite rhyme, does it? You could make it work in a rap. They have a way of making those words fit.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Well, I was reading some information on the internet, as I do from time to time.
The internet? Well, that's strange. Nobody ever looks at the internet.
And I came across a possible legal dispute that had flared up that I thought was kind of interesting.
A legal dispute, huh?
I know. You never hear about people arguing or having trouble on the internet.
Oh, no. Everybody is at peace, and they're all in harmony and just thumbs-upping everybody's stuff.
Thumbs-upping. keep your thumbs up to yourself, buddy.
Is your thumb up, or are you just happy to see me?
So to give you a bit of background, as I read through this story, it seemed to have a lot of different implications as far as property rights and things like that. And so I thought that would be kind of a interesting story to tell and segue into some different legal issues that pop up because of it.
All right, I'm all for it.
So there is an Instagram influencer and blogger. Her name is, well, not her name, but her account is WeWoreWhat.
We wore what?
Yep. And her name is Danielle Bernstein.
Uh-huh. And the Bernstein Bears? Is that the grown-up daughter and the Bernstein Bears?
I was wondering if she's related to the Bears. I'm not certain.
Yeah.
She could be related to the family. I'm not.
All right.
But actually, there's just spelled differently. It's Bernstein.
Yeah, it is kind of different. Bernstein or something like that.
There's an interesting thing, though, that a lot of people seem to remember it being Bernstein at one point, but it was actually Bernstein.
Bernstein?
So it's kind of a... It's something... It's another... rabbit hole in the internet you can go down.
Is it?
Yeah, because I started to. I was like, no, I need to get back on focus here.
I think bear stain is more like what those bears on that toilet paper commercial advertise.
So her name is Danielle Bernstein. Let's get back on topic here. And she is a fashionista, I guess you might say.
Yeah.
And she went to school for fashion, and she started a blog back, I think, in 2010 about clothes and design and things like that. And she is now listed as a influencer.
Ooh, so she has influence, huh?
That's right. So that's
is
kind
she
of,
under the influence, or she puts others under the influence?
She puts others under the influence, so they buy whatever she's hawking.
Oh, so she's like a dealer.
Kind of. So an influencer is kind of a newer term that you hear thrown around a lot these days.
Yeah.
And a social media influencer is somebody on some sort of social media website that has established credibility in a certain field, and they are used by different corporations to put out that corporation's products to a large audience and persuade others by virtue of them having that item there that they should purchase it too. So it's kind of a way of advertising.
Kind of like we do on our podcast, but we don't have quite as many people.
I guess. I don't know. I never really thought of myself as an influencer.
Well, we think of ourselves as just doing an ad, right?
I think of myself as being under the influence from time to time.
I haven't. I just finished up dry January.
You did, yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I had to go out yesterday on February 1st and have a few beers to celebrate dry January.
Well, we wore that. We wore what? I keep wanting to say we wore that, but it's we wore what? They have quite a presence on Instagram. I think she has something like 2.3 million followers, and she is very influential.
I'm not on the gram, so I haven't seen her.
I'm on there, but I don't have that many followers.
I can barely manage Facebook. So.
And she collaborated with different companies that have different designs and fashion, things like that, like jeans and swimsuits and whatnot. And they release limited edition runs like in collaboration with her. So she's kind of almost transcended just being an influencer and also kind of designing her own clothes with these different companies.
So it's kind of a direct marketing campaign.
Kind of, yeah.
Because she's got these followers that look to her for what's in vogue and what kind of fashions they should be looking for. So she puts it out, and then these companies benefit.
Yeah. And Anya is a pretty big swimsuit name brand, I guess. Well, I'm not really sure.
Anya?
O-N-I-A.
O-N-I-A.
And I'm not an expert on women's swimwear. I was actually thinking we should have had Stephanie on maybe as an expert witness to talk about women's swimwear. I feel like she's always looking at bathing suits on the internet.
I think you should have a lifeguard on there to do it. Would maybe. They be experts? I don't know.
Well, so she's collaborating with Anya to do these swimsuits, and that's where player number two enters this saga. Huh. There is a woman named Jade Myers, and she is a Poshmark seller.
A Poshmark? Is that a brand name?
Well, it's she runs a fashion resale business, and Poshmark is a website where private sellers can sell used clothes and things like that.
I see.
It's supposed to be more like where you can get affordable fashion, like secondhand, almost like a secondhand store kind of.
Okay.
And she runs this business on Poshmark, and she also has her own Instagram account, and it's called Fashion Without Trashin'.
Huh.
So, and she's one of Poshmark's, she's one of Poshmark's bigger sellers on there. So she does a lot of resale business for fashion.
Okay.
That's her business.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the story has been taken down off the internet. I came across it from a BuzzFeed article, and that's how I saw it. But if you go to these different Instagram accounts and things like that, you're not going to see any of this anymore. It's been kind of scrubbed clean.
So you'll just have to take our word for it.
Or go to the BuzzFeed article.
Oh,
they have the copies of the screenshots and everything there too.
Okay.
So somehow in the story, maybe at Goodwill, we're not exactly certain, Myers, the reseller, she was able to find these exclusive bathing suits that Bernstein had collaborated with Anya and list them for sale on her Poshmark page.
Mm-hmm.
She was unaware that they were actually prototypes and not for sale yet. Bernstein had messaged her and asked her to take the items down and explained that a member of her team had accidentally donated the items to Goodwill, and she offered to purchase all the items back from her. So what happened is that the secondhand seller somehow got a hold of this box of unreleased or prototype bathing suits that were supposed to be released in the spring,
okay,
but they hadn't been. They accidentally made their way to her.
So this company sent this swimwear to this influencer.
Yes, I guess.
So that she could model them in collaboration with them and release those pictures at a certain time.
Right. Or they were maybe possible designs and said, what do you think of these? Do you like these? Whatever.
But they weren't ready for the general public to see them.
No, they were not. They should not have gone out.
So then the influencer did whatever she does with them to study them or whatever to see what she thinks of them, and then accidentally donated them to Goodwill, and they ended up at this Poshmark place.
Yeah, well, not at the Poshmark place. Poshmark is the website. They end up on the Poshmark website in Meyer's store.
Okay.
Because each person has like their own store on this website.
All right, because when I looked through the article, I didn't fully understand how did all this happen. So that's what I was piecing it together.
So she contacts Myers and says, hey, can you please take these down? They weren't supposed to go out. It was an accident. A member of my team accidentally donated the items to Goodwill. And she said, I'll purchase all the items back from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Myers was like, oh, geez. She was very like, I understand, you know, that shouldn't have been out. And she said, well, can I just hang on to them once they're released? Kind of list them then.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no, some of these designs aren't even going to be released. We need to get them back. And Bernstein said, and this is a quote on the thing, said, I will buy them back from you and give you a gift card for your cooperation or for your corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I think she actually meant cooperation, but she had a typo and said corporation.
Yeah.
And Myers said, okay, I would have to sell them to you at resale value. And she explained she had bought them, she had paid employees to go out and source them to go find them.
Right.
And that she had to pay models to basically model the clothes and had to edit the photos, and she has to list the items on
So she didn't
websites.
Just say it's $15 a suit. She went into a whole bunch of
she said she had. She did, and she said, that's why I'm going to charge you the resale value. That's mm-hmm. They are what I've listed them for. That's what I need for them, because mm-hmm. that's what I need to make money on them.
Right.
Because I have all this other
investment
in it. And, yeah. You know, I'm a small business, and I need that back.
Right.
I can't just give them to you. But if you look at it, she's, you know, Bernstein's talking about giving her gift cards, and she's talking about, like, she's listing business expenses and things like that. So mm-hmm. anyway, so Meyer said to her that she needed all the resale value. Bernstein said, that's fine. She appreciates it and asked if PayPal would work for payment.
Mm-hmm.
So Meyer said, that's fine. And she said, we're working on removing these from all different sites, including Pinterest and Instagram and different websites. And it'll take a couple hours, but I'll pull them all down. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Meyer's has a pretty large business. I mean, she's not just listing this on one place. She's, you know, and she has her own Instagram account that has quite a few followers too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not as many as Bernstein, but still quite a few. So Bernstein again said, thank you. And we'll get you a gift card for our site. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, it's like, she's not really, I don't really see these two people are on the same page. One person's kind of saying one thing and that person's saying, that's great. I'll get you a gift card, you know, whatever. They're not really saying.
But she never mentioned how much that she owed her for all the suits.
She never did. She said, I'm going to pull them down and I'll figure out how much it all is, because there was about 100 items. I mean, it was
right.
She had come across a large box of these things.
A large cachet.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, one person's talking about the business cost and the resale value and how much it costs to run a business. And the other is talking about giving gift cards and, mm-hmm. and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I thought you meant I'll pay you back and then I'll give you a gift card on top of that.
I don't think that's what she meant. I think she meant, I'll give you some money for these and then I'll give you a gift card because mm-hmm. whatever. It seems that Bernstein doesn't really seem to think that Myers is running a business here, that she's just some person off the street who's
right.
selling these things.
Yeah.
But, you know, Myers is a business person. I mean, mm-hmm. that's her business.
Yeah.
So Myers gets all these things pulled off her different websites, and she emails her the cost of pulling all the clothes off and what she needs. Like I said, it was 100 pieces of clothing, so it's quite a few. Mm-hmm. And she emailed her the cost and said, we can drop off the clothes tomorrow after you give me the payment in PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bernstein replies, I think there's some confusion. I'm not paying you for the resale value. I'm paying you for the cost of what you paid. I was under the impression you got them for very cheap. So Bernstein's thinking, you pick these things up for cheap. I'm just going to give you what you paid for them, and I'll give you a gift card for taking them down. And Myers is thinking, well, no, this is my business. Mm-hmm. I've incurred costs and expense to bring these out.
I'm just
going
to sell them all to you.
Yeah,
I'd sell them to anybody.
Right, because they're mine now.
Mm-hmm.
So Myers again countered back to her and said that she believes she should be paid what the items were listed for sale, mm-hmm. since it would be a loss of profits and inventory for her and her business. And she said the quote she provided was to account for the cost of sourcing the items, as well as payment to one of her employees that worked to list them and unlist them off the different websites, and the model she had to pay to for all that. So she kind of went through and explained, like, hey, mm-hmm. I can't just take
right $5 a suit
right.
that you picked them up at Goodwill.
So Bernstein said, well, I'm confused. And she assumed that she had bought them from Goodwill and they were donated there, and so they were probably very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point in the whole communication, this is where I think
there has not been a meeting of the minds.
No, there's not been a meeting of the minds, but I think this is where Bernstein made a critical error.
Yeah.
She said that she was in touch with Poshmark's CEO and threatened to pull down her Meyer's entire account if she ever put the items back up.
Mm-hmm.
So she's attempting to use her
influence.
Her influence.
Because she's an influencer.
She's an influencer.
So she's got a lot of that.
Yeah. On Poshmark, and say, like, basically threaten her, like, mm-hmm. hey, you want to keep your store? You need to get these back to me and do it the way I want to. Otherwise, you know, you're going to lose your whole store.
Mm-hmm.
And she then said, well, how about I trade you some other clothes that you can sell? Which may have been actually not a bad
trade. Yeah.
But at that point, she had already kind of threatened her and mm-hmm. came at her with, like, you know, if she had come off that earlier and said, hey, I don't have the ability to pay you for this, how about I trade you some of these other items and maybe we'll work it out that way.
Right.
That might have been better. But she went straight to the guns and said, you know, tried to strong arm her.
Mm-hmm.
So Myers wasn't having any of it. And Myers was immediately upset. Because, you know, she had built her business too, and this was her livelihood and how she made her money.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she was under no legal obligation to pull the items, and she did so basically as a courtesy because she felt she wanted to help her out.
And also that she was going to get paid for it, that she thought that she was going to get paid for it, so why right. not go ahead and help right. her out and pull them down?
Now, then Myers received an email from an attorney So that's where it gets a little bit even more legally speaking.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk about that, but I think before that, there actually is a motion before the court today.
Why, yes, your good honor, Judge Ship, we would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right, well, who's on the docket?
We have with us our friends at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals?
Not right this moment, but there could be.
You achieved your goal of dry January.
That's right. I achieved my goal.
I didn't. But I wasn't trying.
Well, I did, but it really wasn't that big a deal. BetterHelp.
Oh, go ahead. After you, good sir.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 24 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
And there is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas.
The service is available for clients worldwide.
And you can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy.
Reading those old, old magazines.
That's right.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. It's at www.betterhelp.com/reviews/.
And we have a special offer for court-appointed listeners. You get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/court.
So join the over 700,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional at BetterHelp.com. Mike and Tommy want you to get better with help.
So Miss Myers got a letter from an attorney, which is always a fun thing to get.
Dun, dun, dun.
And said, Miss Myers, well, this is an email. Because I think they probably want to try to respond quickly. Miss Myers, please be advised that I, something they had that blanked out, represents Anya and We Wore What in connection with certain trademark and copyright claims that were brought to your attention earlier today by Miss Bernstein. Do you have counsel that represents your company, or should we communicate with you directly? This email is being sent in the interest of time and does not, number one, set forth the claims of Anya and or We Wore What, nor, two, identify the damages to which they are entitled. To the extent we do not hear back from you regarding the identity of your counsel, to the extent the same exists, we will follow up with you directly with a formal demand letter which will outline damages owed to Anya and We Wore What, best, and then signs the attorney's name. So, just a quick, you know, threatening email saying, hey, we're going to send you...
We're going to sue your pants off.
Yeah, with what damages there are, which is ridiculous because what damages did they suffer at this point?
Well, not only that, it's not like she did anything shady or anything. She acquired these garments through her normal way of business, I guess.
Yeah.
And then promoted them in the normal course of how she does things. And there was nothing out of the ordinary. She didn't like steal them or go through somebody's garbage or something like that. So it was an honest mistake.
Right.
And it was really that other lady, the Bernstein, she didn't safeguard it properly. She really didn't do what she should have done.
Right.
But there's no way that I think that Myers is responsible for any of this. If she's out money, then Bernstein owes her. She wants it corrected.
And this is one of my pet peeves, too. This email is signed, like, best, and then has the attorney's name.
Yeah.
Look, if you're sending an email like this, don't put best. Don't put very truly yours. Don't, you know, put something like, you know, sincere.
Have a nice day.
This is best. What are you talking about, best? You know, that's just not even... Yeah,
smug, isn't it?
Yeah, when I write a letter to clients, I usually sign it off very truly yours. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, I just put very truly yours.
I usually do sincerely.
Well, and I when I'm sending something to an adverse party, I usually say sincerely or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't put very truly yours because I'm not very truly the yours, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that just kind of stuck out. I was like, you know?
Serious business.
Yeah, best. I always like, whenever I'm doing a serious demand letter, I put in all caps at the bottom, govern yourself accordingly.
Yeah.
That always sets my tone, I think.
I used to do that with the railroad when I had to put out notices about things. The last line after the notice was be governed accordingly. And that was kind of like the guillotine hanging up there.
Yeah.
Do it or else.
Yeah. So Myers posted all this, and then suddenly a change.org petition started to boycott Poshmark if they allowed small businesses to be bullied in this manner. So, And Myers posted all this on her Instagram account, like basically what was happening to her, how she was being bullied. Well, nothing else happened. And then on Tuesday of last week, Bernstein took to her Instagram stories to share that she had met with Myers in person and they had a heart-to-heart and came up with a fair resolution. And she even claimed that the two cried together after resolving the issue. So they evidently worked it out. I don't really know how it was worked out or what happened, but...
Do we believe that that happened, or did they maybe kill Myers and hide the body, and that's their story?
I don't know. She still has a couple posts coming out on Instagram I've seen. I checked it out.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be... This is a very interesting case, because it's like a... almost like a law school test where they give you a set of circumstances and you have to kind of spot the issues that are presented there and write an essay about it. So I thought we would do that. We're going to spot some issues. Because when you're doing legal writing, you use the IRAC method. Do you remember what that was? We talked about in a previous episode.
IRAC?
Yeah.
No, I can't remember.
Issue.
I remember you using that term. But
issues, rules, application, conclusion.
Oh, okay.
So the first part of IRAC is you spot the issues. Then you talk about the different rules there are. Then you apply it to your case, and then you have a conclusion. So at least we're gonna at least get into the I part of that and spot the issues.
Well, what I would kind of, and this may be wrong because I generally am, but what I would relate it to is sort of like a HIPAA violation that the what's her name Bernstein was in charge of some private information.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't dispose of it properly. She went out and gave it to Goodwill instead of shredding it.
Yeah.
Like she should have done, or burn it, or whatever, you know, she let that get out. That information went into the wrong hand. The information being the swimsuits got into the wrong hands, and they published it. So I don't see that as the people that it got into the wrong hands. If you know, somebody didn't follow correctly on HIPAA, it wouldn't be the person that published it. It'd be the person that didn't handle it correctly in the first place, because they were the ones bound by HIPAA, not the person that came into, you know, receipt of it.
I can see it that basically she told one of her staff that said, look, you can't sell it, you can't wear it, I just need you to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And so the staff heard, can't sell it, can't wear it, I can donate it to Goodwill and get a tax write-off.
Sure.
They probably got a receipt for you know, $100 to save money on taxes. I don't know how it ended up at Goodwill.
I don't think there's too many people shopping at Goodwill for Gucci swimsuits, though, that you got to market for.
Well, but obviously, Myers spends her time going through stores like that and trying to find these diamonds in the rough.
You know, and there's a lot of retro stuff and things like that at Goodwill. You know, everything comes back around. And with these influencers, all they got to do is say it's in fashion and everybody goes and buys one.
Yeah. So one of the main issues that I see is that Myers, who is the reseller on Poshmark, she is what is known as a bona fide purchaser.
Bona fide.
Also known as a BFP.
BFP.
Yeah, usually you see that.
An MVP?
That acronym is BFP.
Yeah.
And that, when it actually means bona fide purchaser for value without notice. And so that is a term predominantly used in common law jurisdictions, and it refers to an innocent party who purchases property without notice of any other party's claim to the title of property.
Mm-hmm.
A BFP purchases the property and they have no notice that anybody else like has any kind of claim to it or anything like that. They've actually paid money for it, and
they acted in good faith.
They acted in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
So even if a party fraudulently conveys property to a bona fide purchaser for value, the bona fide purchaser for value will, and this is depending on how the law is written, but at common law, they'll take good title to the property despite somebody else's claims.
Right.
So the person who lost the property, their claim would be against the person who fraudulently took it, not the person
who owns it,
because they're essentially in, they're no fault of their own. They're the one good person in this situation, assuming the other person is too.
Right.
In England and Wales and other jurisdictions in the 20th century, the precedent was that the BFP will not be bound by the equitable interests of which he or she does not have actual constructive or imputed notice, as long as he or she has made such inspections and ought to reasonably have been made. So in this situation, if you're applying that law, I think you could very easily say Myers had reason to believe that this property was legitimate when she purchased it.
Sure.
Now, if it was in some sort of box and it said not for public consumption, if found, please destroy, or had something like that printed on the tags,
right,
then maybe at that point she's not so
innocent
about it. She should have
clean hands, clean as hands. They say, yeah, when you come to court.
Well, that's an equitable defense, the doctrine of unclean hands.
Judge Judy brought that up the other night.
Did she?
Yeah, because a person was complaining about someone taking their car, but they didn't have a driver's license and they didn't have insurance on said car. So she said, you couldn't own it anyway. You don't have a driver's license and you don't have insurance. How could you own the car? Well, I was paying for it.
Yeah,
yeah, but you can't own it. You don't have clean hands.
That's funny. BFPs are sometimes referred to as equities darling. That's another way they describe them.
Equities darling.
It's not so much that equity has any great affection for the purchaser. It's simply that equity refuses to intervene to preserve any rights held by the former beneficial owner of the property. Courts of equity traditionally did not want to take away from a BFP.
Mm-hmm. Or a BFF.
Now, in the United States, we have patent law, and it codifies the bona fide purchaser rule under 35 U.S.C. 261. And unlike the common law rule, the statute cuts off both equitable and legal claims to title. So there's neither. If you are a bona fide purchaser for value, you can't make a claim under equity or law, which, again, that we talked about that in a couple of episodes previously. Those laws have kind of been combined a little bit. You don't have separate courts of equity and separate courts of law. It's all one thing. So that's one issue, is I think that Myers is a BFP.
I'd say so. She's a B-I-G BFP.
Bona fide. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that this attorney talked about, too, in his kind of strident email, he talked about in the opening paragraph about trademark and copyright claims that were brought to attention. So he's trying to stretch this out and say that there's some sort of copyright claim or infringing on it. And part of the reason why he's outlining that is that that is one of the main ways you can get things taken down off the internet if there are trademark or copyright claims. And that's a quick way to get websites to take things down. So I don't know that necessarily there are any kind of trademark or copyright claims here, but that's a fast way to get things off the internet.
Well, and they weren't the ones that had those trademark claims either. It would be the original maker of the suits.
Well, now they were in a collaboration, so they I guess in theory both owned that. So trademark infringement is the principal weapon that brand owners usually use when they're trying to combat unauthorized dealers. There's nothing improper about selling a genuine product by an unauthorized dealer insofar as the trademark or other law is concerned, though. That's the interesting thing. There's something called the first sale doctrine in both trademark and copyright law, and that bars the brand owner from controlling the downstream sales.
Sure. Otherwise, you could buy something and say you decide you don't like it and you sell it to somebody else. They say, oh, no, you can't do that.
Yeah. Trademark infringement can still arise regardless of the first sale doctrine, though, in certain circumstances. The first sale doctrine provides that one who purchases a branded item generally has a right to resell that item in an unchanged state. The trademark rights of a brand owner are exhausted once that particular item has been sold in the market. But as I said, there is an exception to that, which often applies in the context of unauthorized online dealers, the material difference exception. That doesn't really apply here, but I'll go into it a little bit. The first sale doctrine does not protect alleged infringers who sell trademark goods that are materially different from those sold by the trademark owner or its authorized dealers. A material difference from authorized good creates confusion over the source of the product and results in loss of the trademark owner's goodwill. In other words, materially different goods sold by an unauthorized seller are not considered genuine because they are confusingly different. So this difference here is, she wasn't trying to confuse anybody and say that I'm an authorized dealer of these or anything like that, or there's any kind of difference.
Right.
She was just saying, these are,
I came into
used clothes that I purchased.
Yeah.
You know, fair and square.
Right. No take backs.
No take backs. Some of the different material differences that have been talked about in courts can include changes in operators' manuals, service plans, differences in available services for authorized versus unauthorized goods, differences in warranty protection covers. Authorized and unauthorized sales often lead to trademark infringement whenever that kind of arises. But again, not that doesn't really apply to here. So I think that whole first sale doctrine probably bars them from making any kind of claim against this. Now, the interesting thing is that this is not kind of a new thing. This is not a first time that this has happened. Intellectual property in the fashion resale market have been kind of a burgeoning area of different laws recently. And there's a lot of different lawsuits that have popped up about these issues. Now, this is a little bit different. The ones that I've read about in the past, these are a lot of people passing off knockoffs or things like that. Mm-hmm. So they are actually diluting the trademark of the person who owns it.
Right.
So they're not essentially the same thing as as this person who bona fide purchaser for value of actual goods that's going off and reselling them. And I think for the most part, anybody who does this, who resells like fashion clothes and whatnot, they're probably fine to do that because of this whole first sale doctrine. Mm-hmm. There's not really anything else that
you can, as long as you're not making them in your basement and selling them as supposedly as this type of garment.
Yeah. Or alternatively, if like you take one of those garments and then you sew something else on it, mm-hmm. and you say, well, this is a special one because I've added this to it.
Yeah.
And then at that point you're making a material change to it. So that might be some sort of infringement.
Well, that was one of my questions. Like if you took like a pair of Nikes or something and added something to it, then called them Nikes with flashlights,
yeah,
or something like that, and yeah, you started selling them, you couldn't do that because that's not an actual Nike product. As long as you don't change it, though, you could sell it.
Yeah. There's an interesting case, too. Tiffany v. eBay. Tiffany is the jewelry brand, mm-hmm. and they sued eBay, and they claimed that eBay could reasonably anticipate that any listing for a large quantity of Tiffany items, like five or more, was probably counterfeit profits because of Tiffany's rigid distribution channels. Mm-hmm. And courts ruled in eBay's favor, saying that eBay was not liable for any contributory trademark infringement on the sale of counterfeit Tiffany goods, trademark dilution, and false advertising because it did not use Tiffany's marks more than necessary to identify the item. So even that, the Supreme Court's taking a pretty, it's not the Supreme Court, it's the Second Circuit, but they're taking a pretty broad view of what you're allowed to do. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you could say that, well, here's 100 Tiffany pieces of Tiffany jewelry. Well, those probably aren't all real. I mean,
right.
You'd have to almost think that, but mm-hmm. the Supreme Court or the Second Circuit said, well, we're not going with that. So, but there's been different cases that have come out that essentially come down on the side of whoever is a reseller. And that probably has to do with the public policy interest of wanting to keep a free market open and allow these things to continue to cycle through.
Yeah. I don't see how you could. It'd be too much leeway in there to determine a case by case basis. If you didn't, I mean, people that just want to resell something that they had, I mean, how many, you buy a watch, you know, and it's a Rolex. Well, if you want to sell it down the line somewhere, cause you need the money, there shouldn't be anything that keeps you from selling it. And you advertise, I have a Rolex I want to sell.
The actual first sale doctrine was talked about by the Supreme Court back in 2013, and their set of circumstances is a little bit different than ours. They were talking about people buying products overseas and then bringing them back to the U.S. and then selling them here in the U.S. for a profit because they were able to purchase them cheaper overseas. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court essentially held that the first sale doctrine even applies to overseas sales as well.
Hmm.
So it's kind of interesting. They're taking a pretty broad approach to that.
So if you can buy them overseas, import them, and market them and sell them for less than what they're selling them here, all good for you.
Yeah, it's kind of the approach they took. And there's different ways they describe this, calling it kind of like the gray market as opposed to like black market. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a gray area.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting thinking about the first sale doctrine and all this. So, but now you, I guess, did a little bit of research talking about social media influencers to begin with, though, right?
Well, that's what, when I saw what this case was about, the thought that occurred to me is, you know, influencers, we hear that term a lot now, and somebody's an influencer, and you have different kinds of ones for different things.
Yeah.
And I thought, who was the first influencer, and how did that come about?
That's a good question. I don't know who it would be.
So I looked it up, and it said that an internet celebrity, also known as a social media influencer, is a celebrity who has acquired or developed their fame and notability through the internet. The rise of social media has helped people increase their outreach to a global audience. Internet celebrities may be recruited by companies for influencer marketing to advertise products to their fans and followers on their platforms. Internet celebrities often function as lifestyle gurus who promote a particular lifestyle or attitude. In this role, they may be crucial influencers or multipliers for trends in genres, including fashion, technology, video games, politics, and entertainment. Hmm. In 1991, with the wide public availability of the internet and the World Wide Web, that's where the WWW comes from, numerous websites were created to serve as forums for topics of shared interest. In some topic areas, this allowed users to get advice and help from experienced users in the field. The type of information that was typically lacking in mainstream print media or corporate websites. Dedicated social media sites arose from these where users could create profiles and make friends with other users. The first such social media site was 6degrees.com in 1997. Similarly, websites that supported blogging arose around 1997 and gave a means for users to post long forum articles and stories of their own. Since then, the forum, social media, and blogging have become a central part of communication, social life, businesses, and news publishing. Popular social media platforms include Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, WeChat, WhatsApp, and YouTube. In 2001, a study from Rutgers University had found that people were using internet forums as influential sources of consumer information. This study suggested that consumers were using internet forums and social media to make purchasing decisions over traditional advertising and print sources. The early 2000s saw corporate attempts to use the internet for influencing, with some companies engaged with forums for promotion or to offer bloggers free products in exchange for positive reviews.
Yeah.
So some of this may be getting a little bit...
Well, the ethical person that does that will say at the end of their story or whatnot that I was compensated for this or something along those lines.
Yeah. Some of these practices were considered unethical.
Yeah.
The Blogstar Network, launched in 2004 by Ted Murphy of Mindcomet, invited bloggers to an email list to receive paid offers from corporations based on the type of posts they made, such as being paid a few dollars for reviewing a fast food meal in their blog. Blogstar is considered the first influencer marketing network. Murphy followed Blogstar with PaperPost, launched in 2006, which paid influential posters at the larger forum and social media sites for each post about a corporate product with payment rates based on the influencer status of the individual. You know, how many followers they have and everything.
Or like impressions.
Yeah. PaperPost, while popular and creating a number of other similar programs from other companies, received a great deal of criticism as these influencers were not required to disclose their involvement with PaperPost as traditional journalism would have, and made the public aware that there was a drive by corporate interest to influence what some people were posting to these sites. Despite concerns, Influencing Marketing Network continued to grow through the rest of the 2000s and into the 2010s. By 2019, the influencer market network sector was estimated as a multi-billion dollar industry.
I don't doubt it.
It was talking about the biggest YouTube sensation is a guy named PewDiePie.
Yeah, I've heard of PewDiePie.
And it said that every minute, 300 hours of videos are uploaded to YouTube. Every minute, 300 yeah. hours. And 5 billion views are watched every day.
It's amazing the amount of media that is out there now. The internet has really exploded. Like podcasts, too. I mean, think about that. Think about how many podcasts there are now.
Well, that's one of the things they talked about. They call it a micro-celebrity. And they say that, you know, that they were talking about the different ways. And one of the ones that they say to become a micro-celebrity is do a podcast. We've done a podcast, and if we're a micro-celebrity, we're a micro-celebrity.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's anything micro about you. You're pretty big dude.
We're into the tens of tens in followers.
There's literally hundreds of people that listen to us.
The one other thing that I saw, I thought was interesting in China. It's a big thing, and it's called Wang Hong. It's a Chinese version of internet stardom. The Wang Hong economy is a Chinese digital economy based on influencer marketing and social media. Wang Hong have been predominantly used to generate profits via retail or e-commerce through attracting the attention of celebrities, followers. Internet celebrities have also become a popular phenomenon in China. For example, Sister Furong received worldwide notoriety and fame for her self-promotion efforts through online posts. The internet celebrities economy was estimated to be worth $8.4 billion in 2016, which was more than China's total cinema box office revenue in 2015.
Yikes.
That's how big that has become in China.
That puts it in scale for you, huh?
Yeah.
So influencers have a big role on the internet today.
Yeah. They also have a big responsibility, though, over what they do, because if they're intentionally misleading people and stuff like that, you know, that's not very good.
No, it's not.
but where do you draw the line between they're doing something merely because they got compensated, or they're doing something because they believe in it, or they're just doing something because they benefit from it?
Yeah.
You know, they have a stake in it or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You got to be careful what you do. It's just like, you know, reviews. They talked about how if you're not sure about a product or where it's coming from, the best way to check on it is go read the reviews.
Yeah.
But then you read about these places where they will generate, you know, for X number of dollars, we will give you 100 good reviews, five-star reviews.
Yeah.
So what are the reviews worth?
I don't know.
Not worth anything. Then they have the whole brushing your yak type deal.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I asked Tommy about different legal issues we covered in the episode. The first one, what is a BFP?
No, that's not it.
I don't know where you're going with that. I automatically cringed. I was like,
Buyer for profit.
Bona fide purchaser.
Yeah, that's it.
Really? Really?
Bona fide. I should have remembered it with bona fide in there.
So bona fide purchaser for value is someone who has clean hands when they purchase something. They don't have any notice that there might be any kind of color on the title.
No ulterior motives.
Yeah.
They just were buying it because they liked it.
And the next one is the first sale doctrine. What is that?
First sale doctrine is that when you sell it, that you no longer have control over it anymore. As long as the person doesn't alter it or do anything, you can't influence anything that happens downstream selling it further or something.
Exactly. And that's the term I really like that I think makes a lot of sense is downstream. You can't stop any downstream seller from selling it.
Right.
Unless they do something else that infringes on your trademark.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep it the same and they're just selling it, then they should be able to do
it. Like if they're selling flashlight Nikes. That you can
flashlight
get
flashlight Nikes.
Yeah,
see it now.
We velcroed a flashlight to the top of the toe, so you can see when you jog.
Now, this question I'm going to ask you: there was one legal issue in that letter that lawyer wrote that popped out that I did not bring up, but I want to see if you spotted it. We're going to see if you can issue spot. Is there anything in there that popped up?
About the IP stuff.
Well, it could be IP or it could be anything in that letter that is interesting legally speaking.
Well, the fact that it said the letter was going to be coming later for damages.
Yeah. But there's one thing that the lawyer asked. Do you know what it was?
Best.
No. In the second paragraph, the lawyer said, "Do you have counsel that represents your company or should we communicate with you directly?"
Uh-huh.
Why do you think the lawyer asked that?
Because they were making them think there was going to be a court case and that they would need a lawyer.
No. The reason being is that, ethically speaking, if someone is represented by counsel, a lawyer is not supposed to speak to the person directly. They should speak to their counsel.
Oh.
So, for example, if you're trying to negotiate something, you don't mm-hmm. negotiate with the opposing party. You negotiate with the opposing party's counsel.
Oh, okay.
It is unethical to talk directly to someone else's client.
Oh.
So that was the one issue that popped up that we didn't talk about, but I was going to see if you could issue spot it. So whenever you're doing these kind of essay tests in law school or the bar exam and things like that, they have little boxes they check to see if you spotted all the issues. And so that would be one box that you want to make sure you check all the boxes.
Well, you know, the other night, Riley is in one of her classes. It's a political science class.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher assigns certain books and movies that involve criminal cases and things like that for them to watch as research.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to watch the 1959 movie with Jimmy Stewart in it, Anatomy of a Murder.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be a classic, and it was actually based on an actual event that happened and everything. And Jimmy Stewart, of course, plays a lawyer that you're rooting for.
Right.
George C. Scott played the opposing counsel, Patton.
Yeah.
But it was at one point, Jimmy Stewart kept going to the bar where these other two people worked that were on the plaintiff's sides. He was on the defense.
Yeah.
He kept going there to talk to them. And he kept meeting. I kept saying, he can't do that. He can't meet with the other side's witnesses without their counsel being there and stuff like that. That's not allowed. And he would go there and he was trying to influence them to change their story as far as what went on and everything. And I was like, he's supposed to be the good guy. He can't do that. But now, that was an interesting movie. I got
to
tell you.
If he's just talking to witnesses, he can definitely go talk to witnesses. But if they're represented by counsel, ethically speaking, he needs to speak to their attorney and get permission to talk to them.
Well, they were opposing witnesses.
Yeah, well, they can be opposing witnesses.
Well, I didn't think you could go do it on your own without the other people, without their representatives being aware of it.
Well, you can. You can investigate the case. Now, if they have counsel, you got to talk to their attorney.
Well, there was never any talk of, would you like your counsel present? He would just corner them there and say, look, I need to talk to you about this. If you're a good person, you'll talk to me.
Well, it sounds a little shady.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. But one of the things that struck me about it, the guy that played the judge in the movie was supposedly the actual judge in the actual case.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's interesting.
He was hilarious. Now, he was a terrible actor, but he was hilarious. Some of the things that he said and did in this thing, it'd be worth watching. And some of the things alone that they say, because it was so dated. So a lot of things were very sexist. This movie was made in 1959. Yeah. So a lot of things were very sexist and things like that. And it was just like, oh my God, I can't believe that people said things like that. And that was okay.
Well, now I've been a judge for quite some time now. About a month. So let me regale you with one of my funny stories that took place.
Yeah.
So we were having a hearing, and it was a traffic ticket case, and the guy got sworn in by the clerk to, you know, I promise to tell the truth, whole truth, whatever. And so he did that, and he's like, all right, well, Mr. So-and-so, what happened? You know, I think it was like a failure to yield to an emergency vehicle. So the person didn't get over from a police officer that had somebody stopped on the side of the road. They didn't get over, and they flew by him real fast, and the police had to go pull them over because you're supposed to get over so you don't hit somebody.
Yeah. Nobody ever does that. Nobody stops for emergency vehicles anymore. They just keep driving. They ignore them.
Yeah, you should.
That bothers me.
You get caught. It's not good. So he's like, all right, Mr. So-and-so, why don't you tell me what happened? He goes, well, Judge, he goes, I want to tell you the truth. And I said, well, that's good because you just swore an oath to do that. He kind of looked at me and laughed. So there's my one funny judge story so far.
You better, son, or you're going under the pokey.
So hopefully, you know, I'll be able to have fun like that continuing on.
Well, good. You know, I really thought when I looked up who the first influencer was, I thought it was either going to be Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian.
I thought it'd be Joe Namath.
Joe Namath?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I guess you could say, but he was a paid advertiser for commercials. That had nothing to do with the internet. Influencers have to do with the internet,
I guess.
And followers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Joe had a team, but he didn't have followers.
Nobody followed Joe. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is old man moans. I find that as I grow older, simple tasks that were performed with ease in my younger days now are accompanied by groans and moans. I don't know why that is. When did it start that be when you bend over to tie your shoe? Oh, where did that come from? Lifting a gallon of milk out of the refrigerator. Oh, why does that happen? I don't understand that as we grow older, moans and groans have to accompany us through the process. Simple tasks, bending over, reaching up, picking up a grandchild. You can't pick up a grandchild without moaning or groaning the whole time you're doing it. Oh, what's the matter, Pop? Oh, nothing. I was just picking you up. Did you hurt yourself? No, that's just what you have to do to make it work. I don't know. I don't know why it happens that way. I don't want to be that vocal. I don't want to draw attention to myself when performing simple tasks. But somehow, the moans and groans just inch their way in, and you can't get them out. Even when you try, it still emits. I mean, getting into bed or getting out of bed in the morning. It's a constant groan the whole time. Life is hard, and it just keeps getting harder. You know, somebody once told me that getting older is not for the faint of heart, and I would have to agree. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.